Good afternoon. I hope you had good rest last night, and even had good rest. It's not on? It's on? All right. And that you had some good rest this morning. Well, I'm delighted to have been invited to come here. It's my first time to preach here and teach. I love to teach and preach. I'm delighted that the Lord eventually led me to do this. And I look forward to sharing this lesson with you. Now, I have to say, Wilson only told you half the story about our meeting in Hobby Lobby and then in the Indianapolis airport. We've met at least three more times at Hobby Lobby. Now, one of the young ladies came up to me afterwards this last night. After Wilson had told the story about him being in the Las Vegas airport lobby and viewing all the slot machines, she said, "I thought he was going to say he found you there." Now, I want to say I wasn't there. But I will say I have been in the airport lobby of Las Vegas, and it's just as he said. When I walked into there, I thought, I can remember the statement by my nephew, who was a very frugal young man, and the first time he ever went to Las Vegas and landed at the airport and walked in and saw that, he said, "I think I know who's winning most of the bets here. Only fools go to Las Vegas to throw their money away." God had a plan for us in our earning of our living, and that was to work. But I really enjoyed the lesson last night that Wilson brought to you, and I amen it. It's needed, and he'll speak to us this afternoon about our dress, and that's needed too. God, do you really care whom I date, whom I marry? Or is that all up to me? I tried to select a slide that suggests what we normally think about when we think about dating and marrying. What is it? It's love. And what is that? It's romance. We want to be in love. How many of you want to be in love? I'm not saying that you're not now married folk, but how many of us want to be in love? I do. It's wonderful. I've been in love several times. I have to give my credentials. I'm a lifelong bachelor. I've never married. I don't have any children. I like to say when I speak on these matters, I am not skewed or colored by any experience. I don't have anybody's corn to grind. I just try to call it as I see it. And as I read it in Scripture, to the best of my ability. But does God care? Or is it all up to me? Well, let me see if I can answer this question. God, do you really care whom I date, whom I marry? Yes. That's the lesson. Wouldn't you like to know that that's as quick as we can make it? He does care. But how do we know? What's the evidence that he cares? I'd like to see the hands of all the single people. I'm a single person. Let me see the hands. It's all right. I'm not going to ask you for money. Come on, get them high. If you're a single person, come on, get them high. Other single people might like to know. All right. All right. Now, of all the single people, I saw a few married people starting their hand coming up. I did say you wanted to be single again. All right, of all those who are single, who would like to someday be married? I'm going to see. I'm going to put my hand up. Oh, I've not given up hope. Yeah, and that's good. That's what God intended. It's not good for a man to be alone or a woman alone. Well, there's a reason for that. But what is the scriptural evidence that God really cares about who we date and who we marry? Now, someone says, well, I can see about marrying, but I don't see that God really cares about who I date. How many people have you known that didn't ever date the person that they married? Now, I have known a couple of people who did. They met them at the wedding ceremony. They were from the East, where they do that. And I was totally intrigued. This was a lady who was a nurse for my mother when she was in the hospital, and she was from India. I said, would you tell me about that? And so she told me, and I said, well, how did you feel? She said, well, I felt fine. I said, you weren't concerned? She said, well, no, my parents, I trusted them. I trusted them. We're going to talk more about that in just a moment, the role of parents in our dates and in our dating and in our marriage. But in our culture, you date, and that's who you marry. So if you want to have a good result of your marriage, you need to be careful about who you're dating. That has to be a precious and a specific choice as well. So, what's the scriptural evidence? Now, I'm just going to run through some of the evidence from the Bible, and we're going to do this quickly because I know that you're familiar with these stories from the Bible. First of all, marriage comes from God. Our culture doesn't believe that. Marriage comes from God. Therefore, God knows how to regulate it. God knows its purpose. God knows the pitfalls. Therefore, we ought to look to Him in order to know what it's all about. Marriage comes from God. It was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. New York State read in the morning, I saw on AOL, the blip. Everybody's hoorahing and I'm just celebrating up in New York State. You know why? The New York State legislature passed a law that says that same-sex marriages are legal. You think God cares about that? God hates it. It's an abomination to Him. But that's the world you're living in, young people. Totally different world than I grew up in. The world that I grew up in would not even have imagined. And I'm old, but I'm not that old. We're talking about within 40, 50 years. Look at how far we've come or how low we've sunk in regard to our thinking about marriage. They're two men, two women. What's it going to be next? A man and his goldfish? Well, I mean, God is the origin of marriage. And Jesus was asked a question. Lord, can we divorce for any cause? What would the culture in which we live say? Well, of course. You shouldn't be restricted in your getting a divorce. We have states where there's no fault divorce. You just say, I'm divorcing. You sign a piece of paper, that's it. And he answered and said, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning created them male and female? He created them male and female and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh, so that they no longer are two but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, you want to help me with this? Just read it all together. Let no man separate. Does God care about who you marry and whether or not you stay married? Well, of course He does. But oh, how unfair it is. We have to, by faith, accept the viewpoint of heaven. Who knows best? Further, he said, And they said to him, why then did Moses command her to give a certificate of divorce and send her away? I mean, well, why did Moses permit it then, if what you say is so? And he said to them, because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it has not been this way. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for immorality, and marries another woman, commits adultery. Young people, respect that. You're going to not only bless yourself, but you're going to bless your culture. You're going to be able to give a great gift. What we are crying for in this culture is seeing one man, one woman, one lifetime. My parents were married 62 years. It used to be common that we celebrated 50-year wedding anniversaries. When was the last one you heard of? And even more tragic, how many are we going to have 20 years from now, 30 years from now, 40 years from now, 50 years from now? This is God's law. Sure, he cares. And then there's another evidence. Look at the lengths to which godly parents went to secure suitable mates for their children. Abraham sent a long way a trusted servant to get a wife for Isaac. Why? He did not want him marrying among those pagans in Canaan. He at least wanted to get a God-fearer, someone who believed in God. So he sent back to a distant relative to get Rebekah. And then Isaac and Rebekah, what did they do? Well, they saw the mess that Esau had made with his life, marrying the Canaanite women. And they sent Jacob back to her brother, Laban, to go back there to get a wife. Young people, I know our culture says that you ought to make all these choices by yourself, but if you do, I want to say kindly but forcefully, you're foolish. You're foolish. Don't negate the wisdom of your parents. I want to talk more about that in just a moment. But further, look at this. God prohibited Israel from intermarrying with other nations. Why? Furthermore, you shall not intermarry with them, he says in Deuteronomy 7, 3 through 4. You shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons. For they will turn, note it, for they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will quickly destroy you. He says, I don't want you intermarrying with these other nations because they'll cause you to turn away from me. Oh, but John, he's going to church with me. Well, that's a good start. Is he really a believer? Well, but he's of another faith. He's of a Muslim faith or a Buddhist faith. And as we become more pluralistic in our approaches to religion in this country, that's going to happen more and more. What's going to be our attitude toward that? The world is going to say you're narrow-minded, bigoted, for insisting and teaching your children to marry Christians, Bible believers. I'm going to have more to say about that too, but there it is. God did that from the beginning. And further, when men married without reference to God's will, bad things resulted. Remember, it's Genesis 6, 1 through 2, and I realize that this is a disputed passage, but this is my take on it. I'm the one preaching right now, so I'll give my view on it. Others can correct me if they think needed. There it says, now it came about when men began to multiply on the face of the land and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful. Young men, when you stop right there, you're in trouble. When you see that they're beautiful and you don't get ever past that, you're in trouble. They saw that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves, whomever they chose. Genesis 6, 1 through 2. And what happened at a couple more verses down? The world got so polluted that God said, I repent that I even made it. I'm going to destroy it with a flood. And I believe that's part of it. When the sons of God, God-fearers, God-believers, began to marry the daughters of the sons of men, those who imbibed of the culture in which they were living, who were not God-fearers, it polluted their culture. And then what about Samson and Delilah, the strongest man, I guess, who ever lived? He was given supernatural strength, physical strength. And when he came to women, he was an idiot. Right? He was a moron. He saw a Philistine woman that was beautiful. And he said to his parents, you get me that woman. If they played with him a little bit, no, you get me that woman. Well, if they got him that woman, ultimately he didn't get to live with her as his wife, and it incited a great conflict between Philistia and Israel, and God used it to demonstrate his power. Then he got with Delilah. It wasn't that a match made in hell? And then, what about the wisest man, or one of the wisest men who ever lived, Solomon? I think it's 300 wives. Now, some of those were political, I realize. Maybe not a wife in the real sense, but many of them were. How many concubines? At the end of his life, he is led away into idolatry. So how's that working out? How's that just going into the world and say, I like her, I like him, and I'll choose them? How's that working out for us? Divorce rates staying high. You have got more, you have as good a chance of failing as succeeding, and in many cases a greater chance of failing. And then, God's goal for marriage and family. Now, this is really where I want to hang my case. I want to show you from Ephesians, the 5th chapter, verse 22 through 6:4. And again, I'm not going to take time to read that whole passage, but I'm going to summarize it in 4 points. But this is God's goal for all of us who want to be married. Let's look at it. Ephesians 5, 22 through 6, 4. First, he says, wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. Let me throw them all up here. I want you to see the whole scheme. Then, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Third, fathers, parents, raise your children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Finally, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Now, I've bolded everything I want you to remember. What's the common denominator? The Lord. Christ. Now, girls, wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. When you're thinking about who you're dating and who you're going to marry, think about the man you're going to subject yourself to in the home. You say, well, I can never follow him. He's got some of the craziest ideas. I don't trust him. He doesn't keep his word. Dump him. Move on. Don't be too slow about it. Oh, but I'm going to change him. Girls, how does that work? I want to say, you married women, just raise your hand if you've changed your husband dramatically. I'd like to find one. I mean, how's it? Girls, we don't want you changing us. We plan on telling you what the way it's going to be. We think we're doing pretty good. So when you're thinking about this young man, oh, but he's so handsome, athletic, got a body like a Greek god. Oh, I know we think this way. Was he going to be like a Greek god in the household? All I do is say jump and you just ask how high. That's his management style. That's his leadership style. Just walk in and just give edicts. And then husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. You ready to die for her? You ready to sublimate your personal interest and desires in order to serve your family? First, your wife. If she's the kind of woman that you think you would give your life for? Or is she just pretty? Sexy? You know what I've discovered in our culture? Almost the curse worse than death is to be unsexy. Few sexy. You got it in our culture. And we show it in the way we dress and the way we act. We want other people to see us as sexy. We need to look at one another from the standpoint, would he be a good leader that it would help me to submit to? Is she going to be a good follower that I therefore can be motivated to give my life for her, to serve her? And then, fathers, parents, raise your children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. What kind of a daddy is he going to make? Is he so involved with himself and his body and his sports and his hobbies and his work that he will not take the long view and learn to be a good father? And will he and you establish a home where you will raise children up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord? Now, I believe that's the way God wants us to think. Where we think about our dating and ultimately, of course, our marriage. Well, you say, well, that's all well and good, preacher. But that sure is a lot to think about for a 16-year-old. Well, all the more reason to be waiting. That's a lot to think about at any age. So it does require maturity. So, whom should I choose to date or marry? Whom? What kind of qualities are we looking for? Whom should I choose? Well, I want to suggest to you a text that tells us, blessed is the one who finds wisdom. We're going to talk about being wise. The Bible, to my knowledge, I've looked through here trying to find the name of that woman that I'm supposed to marry, and I haven't found her yet. And, you know, and I've been looking a long time. It's not there. And some people have the idea, God's just going to drop them right down and put them on my front door. I'll never forget when I was early in my preaching. I didn't start preaching. I was 31, almost 32. And so, you know, there weren't a lot of single ladies in the church where I was, a very small church, and they were all married. I've lived in a married world all my life, and that's just the way it is. No point in being upset about it. So at any rate, I had a good friend, and she was talking to me. She was married happily, and we were all friends in the family. So she said, John, you need to move from here. I said, why? She said, well, there ain't anybody for you to date here. I said, you need to move to Nashville. There are a lot of churches there, and there'll be more women for you to date. And I said, and if I don't find one there, do I have to move again? Then I move again? Then move again? Now, I'm not saying that it's ever wrong to change your locale to maybe kind of increase the opportunities to meet other people. I'm not saying that. But if you allow that to dominate your life, this doesn't fit too good here, but I'm going to put it anyway because I'm thinking about it. So, okay, we'll make a little excursion. Let me advocate for being single just for a little bit. Young people, not all of you are going to marry. That's just the facts. Not all of you will marry. Not all of you who want to marry will marry. But I would have you know your life is not over. I have been able to do things and go places and work with people that likely I could not have done had I married, and especially if I had married someone who didn't want me to do them. I've spent 37 years working with young people, a lot. And a lot of my passion has come from the fact they became my children. So, you say, well, I don't plan on following that course. That's fine. But I want to tell you, Paul advocated for some people. Being single is the right course. There's something bigger than getting married. And that's serving Christ and going to heaven and using your life as service to others. That's the goal. For most of you, you will be married. And that's great. But if it doesn't happen, your life isn't over. All right, let's find some wisdom. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. For the gain from her is better than gain from silver, and her profit better than gold. Now he personifies wisdom and speaks of wisdom as a person, as a female person. But he's talking about being wise and getting understanding. She is more precious. She, wisdom, is more precious than jewels. And nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all of her paths are peace. She, wisdom, is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called blessed. I know you want to be wise, and really the remainder of the lesson is to instruct you on how to be wise. All right? So we ask, whose choice? Whose choice is it? Whom I date, whom I marry? Well, historically, parents and family have played a large role. Historically, in most of the world, especially the non-Western world, this is the normal practice with varying degrees of input by the marrying persons. We don't think that way. We think it's strange for families to arrange marriages. I haven't found a Western kid yet that wanted that arrangement, and it's not going to happen. But here's the point I'm bringing up. We're trying to learn wisdom. Would you say that the majority of the world, especially historically, are a bunch of fools when it comes to deciding on how to arrange marriages? That we in the West in the last 400 to 500 years have really discovered the best way to select mates. What's our track record? It's amazing how culturally snobbish we can become and look down our noses at other cultures. I asked this young woman, this nurse who had married by her parents and the other young man's parents' arrangement. I asked her, why did you submit to that? She said, well, first of all, I thought that it was unwise for me at 18 and 19 years old to make such a long-lasting, important decision by myself. Wow. She said, I wanted my parents to do it for me. They were wiser. They knew me. They loved me. Have I convinced you yet? Probably not. That culture operates on the premise that family knows best what is good for their child. This is too important a decision to be left up to the relatively young and inexperienced. Romance, which is our criteria, romance is too, I want you to hear this, romance is too volatile and changing to guide a good choice. Do you believe that? Uh-oh, the song says, I'm in love again. We looked across the crowded room and our eyes met and I knew it was instant love. Love at first sight. Do you believe in love at first sight? Lasting, eternal love at first sight. Most cultures don't trust it. Historically, cultures have not trusted romance as a stable, solid basis upon which to make a lifetime commitment. The criteria has been, are they of the same class, the same religion, same education? Do our families get along? Do they know one another? And, regrettably, often they were for political reasons, or in order to get wealthy. Parents can get off the track too and marry their kids off for other materialistic means. Yes, and we know that. But our culture says no, the individual will make the choice, the person. In more modern times, and especially in the West, the emphasis is on the freedom of the individual to choose. And our reasoning is, well, it's their life. They're the ones going to have to live with it. So they ought to have the right to choose to marry whomever they wish. They know what is best for them, for only they know how they really feel. Underscore that. I'm going to come back to that in just a moment, talk about love. But romance centers our concept of love on how you feel. I can remember one of my times when I was in love. This was with I was in my junior year, going the summer of my senior, my upcoming high school senior year, the summer before. A friend of mine in Huntsville, Texas, introduced me to Ann Davis. I hope to see her someday. I've never seen her since, but man, was she good looking! Wow. I just loved to look at her. She was beautiful. And she was smart. She was going off to Baylor University. She was going to be a freshman. And she was religious. She was a Baptist. I started trying to figure out every way I could to make that, you know, so that would be a good thing. And I went home and we started writing back and forth. I bet I checked the mailbox 3 times a day. You ever been there? It was the agony and the ecstasy. About a couple of months into her school year, of course, she wanted to get fully immersed into university life. I was still in high school. Wrong time. Had to move on. Painful. But then I met another girl. And she slipped up on me. We were just friends. She wasn't as pretty as Ann. But Allison became beautiful. And then she went off to a college, and I went to another college. I could just go through, and then this one. Oh, yeah, being in love is wonderful. But it's not the basis upon which you want to build a lifetime of living and having a partnership with a mate. Our culture says they know what is best for them. They only know how they feel. In the West, we have a general tendency to distrust the idea that anyone can know what is best for us as well as we can. That's dangerous. It's very dangerous. We want romance, and only we can know if it's really there. We're looking for our soulmate. There is that special person just for me. And some even go too far. There's only one. My young friends, that's ridiculous. It isn't so. I know all the movies are based on it, but it's a lie. Just find that soulmate. If we're going to click, it usually means that we click because I feel for him, he feels for me. Well, how's that working out? Every couple that I've ever performed the marriage ceremony for and had premarital counseling with have asked them, why are y'all getting married? Every couple has responded in unison because we love one another. I'd like to tell you that they're all still together. They're not. I'm kind of afraid to calculate my success rate. Falling in love will be the sign that I have found my special person. So, in our culture, we say, who should I marry? I should marry someone I'm in love with. Okay. With whom should I fall in love? Now, we'll talk to you for the remainder of the time. Who should you fall in love with? You say, preacher, it isn't just something you choose. It just happens. Kind of like catching the cold or the flu. You don't know where you got it. You just get it. And a lot of the results are like having the flu. You're miserable. And so we've got this idea. You fall in love, and if you fall in, you fall out. I want to talk to you about who is the person I should love, fall in love with. Should implies a choice. If we choose to marry, there are general principles that will help us to choose wisely. Remember, there's a purpose for a Christian. We ought to choose according to this purpose. First, and I'm going to have to briefly do that. Look at verse 2. So as to live the rest of the time in the flesh no longer, but the lust of men, for the lust of men, but for the will of God. That's our purpose, to live for the will of God. Further, therefore we also have as our ambition, whether at home or absent, to be pleasing to Him. That's number one. Live according to the will of God and to please Him. Further, and we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to the purpose. Allow God to providentially help you. Allow Him by trusting Him, putting Him first in your life. What is our goal? To proclaim the excellencies of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. That's our goal. That's our purpose in life. Question, will this proposed mate help you, lead you, encourage you, or hinder you? If it's the latter, move on. Move on. Allow God to lead further. So, should implies control over falling in love. Can you have control over falling in love? Yes and no. Isn't that a good answer from a preacher? I'm not denying that there are forces that work within us that attract and draw us to certain individuals and not to others. I'm not denying that. It would be foolish. It's so. You know it. Often our attraction is based upon lust. We deny that in ourselves to our peril. Loneliness. We're lonely. So we're looking for somebody to fill the emptiness within us. Acceptance. Admiration. Common interest. What I am asserting, that we can control the intensity and the level of involvement we have with those to whom we are attracted. Married people know this if they're wise. You're going to be attracted, married people, to other people. You don't have to go with it. You could restrict the level of involvement. You can restrict the level of being alone and under circumstances. And we must. I'm a single preacher working in churches for almost 40 years. Mostly, I work with women. Why? Because there are more women than men in churches, as a rule. You got to learn where the boundaries are and know where they are and keep them. It doesn't mean you're not going to be attracted to them. But we have control. So I should fall in love with a person who is a truth seeker. Young people often say, oh, but he's going to church with me. I can see that he's interested. Oh, she's a Christian. She goes to church. What I want to ask you, are they truth seekers? Are they open to Scripture? Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. You know these passages. I am the way, the truth, and the life. What are you going to say to your Muslim friends that don't believe that he is the way, the truth, and the life? How can you share a purposeful life with them if they do not believe in Jesus Christ as the truth, the way, and the life? You can't. It's going to be a very difficult life. If you continue in my word, then you're truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Are they those who continue? They show by their life that they pay attention to the book. Are they truth seekers? Do they love God first? You know the passage. For time, I'm going to skip through that. Do they love others before themselves? The second commandment unto love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength is to love your neighbors yourself. Do they show by their life that they're all consumed with themselves? Are they loving others? These are the kinds of mates that make good marital partnerships. You shall love your neighbors yourself. Further, I'm going to skip this just for the sake of time. It then bears fruit. Coming to church is important. But what is being produced by our church attendance? Worship changes you. Does your girlfriend or your boyfriend love to worship? They love to talk about the Bible. No, I'm not talking about they have to be a Bible scholar, but they have to be an interested student. Do they love talking about the Bible? When y'all are together, can you talk about the Bible in an interested search for truth, turning from this passage or just taking one passage? Is that any fun to you? These are ways that you can use to discern who it is that you ultimately will really be compatible with. He says, bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. And what is the fruit? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. How does he or she measure up there? You say, well, how can I be sure? Don't miss this. We're coming to a close now. You say, well, how can I be sure? You can't. Wish I could tell you, this is guaranteed. No, you know why? Free will. Your mate can change and you can change. So there aren't any guarantees. But there are ways to make it as sure as you can. How? Be the person yourself. You be a true seeker. You be a one who loves God first. You be the one who loves others as you love yourself. You be the one who bears fruit. Why? Look at it. Look at it, my young friends. Like things attract like things. If you're a true seeker, other true seekers are going to be attracted to you and you to them. If you're a person who wants to put God first and to love others as yourself, that young man that you want will see that in you and be attracted to you. And furthermore, you will be more closely able to identify it in another because you see it in yourself. So I say, at camp, often we've done this. We have the older boys and girls write down their description of the ideal mate. It's quite an interesting exercise. And it's amazing. Well, it's not amazing. It's our culture. How often good looking is right towards the top, especially for the boys. A lot of the girls, too. They don't want to be married to some homely person. Maybe it's the reason I've been unmarried so long. But we look at their list and we pick out all those qualities that are solid and say, okay, here's what you need to do. You be these. You be this. If you want somebody who's faithful, who tells the truth, that you can trust, you be that kind of person. Attract that kind of person to you because people who are faithful, who tell the truth, who are honorable, are attracted to people who are faithful and honorable and truth tellers. Am I right, people? That's what you can do. And you know what? It's what you ought to do anyway because if you don't end up married, you're going to end up being a wonderful person. So let's close with just some practical, wise advice. Now, I decided to step outside the Bible for this closing point, and I went and consulted all the professionals in marital counseling and at like, and read their books, and I want to give you their assurances. Here it is. Although each does not involve clear moral choices, the following criteria, if followed, will prove to be the path of wisdom. Couples following all these steps can go to the altar with over a 95% chance of being successfully married. This is what those in our culture who deal with it every day are saying. Oh, well, we don't pay attention to them. We're foolish if we don't. Had premarital confidence. Didn't go to the altar thinking, well, maybe not, maybe so. I don't know whether I want to be married to him. Well, we'll try it. Go assured in your heart, this is a good choice, a wise choice, a godly choice. Second, dated 2 years or more. Why? 50% of couples who date break up within 18 months. So you go 16 months and married. Your chances of divorce have just gone up because you didn't wait long enough to really know who they were. Now, admittedly, there's no biblical rule that says this. We're just gleaning what all these people are seeing and what they've distilled. Next, sought the support of family and friends. Ah! Young people, I would tell you something that you may not care to hear. Here's what I advise. Yes, you're ultimately going to make the choice for who you marry. You voluntarily give your parents veto power over your choice. If they're totally against it, hold off. Try to see it from their perspective. Now, that has to be done by you because likely your parents, well, how are they going to enforce it? You become of age. Now, is that to say that every set of parents is wise? No, and sometimes, obviously, this is just a general rule. But at least consult your parents. Also, consult your family and friends. Do they think he's a jerk? Or they think that she is just a floozy? Do they see things that you are blinded to? Married in a formal wedding rather than eloping. Why? You rob yourself of the power of ceremony and purpose and planning and seriousness. Now, some of you may have eloped and you've been living, you're married now for 40 years. Okay, you're the exception. Exceptions usually don't make a very good rule. Had a formal engagement rather than just an understanding. Well, we think we'll get married someday. Good rule of thumb. Long dating, courting. Short engagement. It's a good rule. Take a long time to make up your mind, but once it's made by God's will, get married in about 3 or 4 months. Preserve purity until married. I apologize for running long, but you got to hear this story. I'd been to the funeral of Robert Turner. I had to fly in from some other far place away. I've forgotten where I was when I got the word. I caught a plane, got to Austin, drove to Burnett. Turned around, drove back to the airport. I got there a little earlier than I thought, and I was able to catch an earlier flight than I had been booked on. And so, I didn't know that I could get on. But good old Southwest Airlines, the only plug I'll make tonight. They say, yeah, we can get you on. I said, good. Here are my bags. They took them. I ran to the gate. I mean, literally, I can still run. I ran to the gate, and I'm just huffing and puffing. I mean, they're just about to shut the door, and I just get in there and go down there, and there's this one seat right on the aisle, right next to a drop-dead beautiful young girl. I said, thank you, Lord. She was in the center seat, and there was a young man, looked about her age. She was in her 30s, young to me. He was sitting by the window, so I sit down. Now, we only have from Austin to Houston, hobby. Not long, 45 minutes. So I like to talk to pretty girls, so we started chatting. Turned out she is a broker for a winery. Broker in wines and all that. And she also said she had been to Baylor. Well, I said, I'd go for it. So I said, what's a good Baptist girl like you doing in the wine business? Well, she chuckled and she said, I know what you're talking about. And I said, well, we talked a little bit about the Bible's view of wine, and et cetera. And I asked a few other questions. She just started talking about her life, and it turned out that she had a boyfriend and they were living together. It's not uncommon, folks, if you don't know that by now. That's the common, very common. Young people think that's wise. I said, well, why are you doing that? She said, my mother's been married 5 times, and I'm going to make certain that I don't make the same mistake she had. I'm going to give him a good trial run before I decide to marry him. I said, you know what the statistics say, don't you? She said, no, what? I said, those who live together experience sexual intercourse before marriage are much higher probability of divorcing than those who wait. She said, really? I said, that's it. I said, why do you think that's so? She said, well, I don't know. I said, because you have left out by your living arrangements the very core of what marriage is. And it is a commitment and a promise to one another for life. You haven't experienced that yet because you're just saying, if this works out, fine. If it doesn't, I'm moving on. So then I start telling her the gospel. Tears start flowing down her cheek. She said, do you know of a church where I can hear a message like that? I said, I believe I do. I think I know some in Austin. Where we're landing. You want to hear the rest of the story? I didn't even know her name. So we're walking off the plane. I said, could I know your name and maybe contact you? She said, well, I've told you everything else about my life. Said, you might as well have it. So she gave me her business card and I gave her mine. I said, I'll be in touch with you. And I have been. But she has not contacted me. It's hard, young people, that once your life is set, to make that drastic a change. It's hard. She saw something in it that was beautiful. It moved her to tears. But now you have to go out into life and live it. Shared values, especially shared faith. Oh, we see the wisdom of that. Had premarital counseling. I required of all those that I perform ceremonies for. We talk about things. Married after the teenage years. Statistically, you have a much better chance of making it if you wait till you're older and more mature. Came from stable homes. Graduated from college. Why? Because people who haven't graduated from college are not going to be successfully married? No. It's really a test of your stick-to-itiveness. College doesn't teach you everything you need to know. It just gives you a test as whether or not you can stick it out. Like marriage. Establish the husband as the primary provider. We're mentally stable and free from addictions. Finally, we're willing to seek help early. And usually, the women will seek it a lot quicker than the men. So what's that pride in us men of unwillingness to admit that our home is not what it ought to be? Conclusion, God has given marriage for our good. Being wise saves a life of heartache. That's why we're preaching on this, young people. To save you a life of heartache, let us choose wisely that we may receive God's blessing. Thank you for listening. My apologies to Wilson for going. Just take it off of my time at the end. Thank you.